voted in 2020 for change in the 11th district, they voted 2-1 in the primary, Democratic primary for Joe Biden versus Senator Sanders. So the vote for change in the 11th district was a vote for from center to left, Joe Biden. I just have to continue to remind where they wanted us to go. And that was more of a continual moving forward, but not dramatic.
Thank you. Ms. Smith.
You know, I too believe, like I said, am I talking on my own? Oh yeah, I believe, like Senator Johnson, that it's not a question of whether we reform the filibuster. I think we just need to get rid of it. And when you talk about the steps that we've taken with Joe Manchin's bill or Senator Manchin's bill, I think that's the best route we can go, because now we're showing a sign of bipartisanship. And I think someone mentioned that. It's very important that since all of these years has passed, since Trump was in, that we didn't have even an inkling, not even an inkling of bipartisanship. So this is a great step on what we need to do.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Barnes, last week, 11 U.S. mayors announced they're forming local commissions to advise them on implementing and overseeing programs providing reparations for slavery. They say this would set an example for the federal government on how a nationwide program could operate. What do you think could be done, should be done at the federal level regarding reparations?
The answer is yes, and I had my hand up for rebuttal.
Okay,
for both the education as well as the filibuster. And I was wondering if I could give a brief comment on both of those issues.
Keep it brief, please.
Okay, well, number one, we're not getting the job done with education. In the state of Ohio, we have 615 school districts. If we look at the number of individuals who are going to college, if we were a company, we'd be out of business. But we need to make sure that we give our young people skills, career technical skills that are consistent with the needs of the job market. I think that the filibuster is something, there's a consequence for winning elections. And one of those is that you're in charge and you have to take charge and move forward. And so the filibuster is getting in the way of policies for which people in America voted for. And so I support that. With respect to the issue of reparations.
Let's discuss reparations.
I support reparations. I think that it's extremely important for America to be true to what it has on paper. And I think that we have to make sure that for all of the abuses, all of the discriminatory practices that have been done by people operating under the color of law, have a responsibility under the rule of law to ensure that individuals are made whole. And so the mayors, that's a first important first step. What I would encourage all of them to do with respect to that is that I think systematically they need to look at their shops first, and they need to incorporate what they learn from their systems into what they're trying to do with national policy. And so I think that an intervention, which is a part of what the Barnes plan is focused on, is to bring about a process where we can look at our institutions and see how we can bring about positive change.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Knight, could you address reparations and what, if any, you think would be most effective?
Well, first of all, it's very disappointing how we bring this, because I think it puts African Americans in a stalemate. Because in reality, we can't even pass the John Barnes. We can't even pass legislation for voting rights. And then we think we're going to pass legislation, which is going to be to give 41 million African Americans $1 million or $2,000 a month. There are other things that we can do that can be given towards our communities and to people going, where it's, you know, getting kids to college, getting people, I would like to rather start with free junior college. And then we would start with, you know, debt relief and also encouraging, and when kids get opportunities to go to graduate school, have those things taken care of. Because I don't know fiscally how this country is going to be able to do that. and putting us in this stalemate, it's really disingenuous, making people believe that this is a real reality.
Dr. Corey, your thoughts?
Well, there's three issues I'd like to address. The reparations, I think, is a complex issue, which also borders on the issue of guaranteed income, which was brought up by, I think, presidential candidate Yang. And so I think that the issue is really in the details. What does it mean? Who's going to qualify? What's the implications for the economy? And will it really help to make better schools, a better economy, for people to have good, stable, prevailing wages? Second issue, I would like to weigh in, was the filibuster. We have to be very careful, because one thing we learned from history is that things change and that there's a, sort of a pendulum swing from one side to the other side. And so we need to be careful, because something like that could be used against us, just like I believe Senator Schumer's nuclear option was used against the Democratic Party when the Republicans gained control. So we have to be very careful. The third issue I'd like to address is very, very important, and that's electoral reform, which includes not just guarantee everybody having a right to vote and that making it insured, but we also need to cut down on the dark money, on the power elite, because the politics is in the hands of the few and not the people. And we need to have also laws that will prevent candidate suppression so anyone can run for Congress.
Okay. Ms. Brown, could you talk, private prisons have become big employers in rural communities, but also in places like Youngstown, economically distressed and looking for alternatives. How do you stand on the use of private prisons at the federal level?
I do not support private prisons. I don't support the federal level having private prisons. It's one of those things that, again, is systemic, it's oppressive. It is very much impacting communities of color, particularly people that look like me. And so to be able to profit off of people in prison is definitely wrong. And I don't believe that we should be funding private prisons with our federal dollars private prisons should not be a thing that exists. And certainly as a legislator at the federal level, I would oppose that vehemently. It just goes against everything that I stand for.
Ms. Turner, your thoughts?
Definitely private prisons should not exist, nor should private immigration detention centers. I will say what I've said before, that the private sector should not be able to make a profit off of other people's misery. Not at all, and we've been doing that for far too long in the United States of America. And one of the ways that we can kind of transition those workers, because I know that the concern is jobs. What happens to those folks who work in those facilities? Well, the greening of America and the Green New Deal is one way to put people back to work in jobs that will pay more than a living wage. And we have so much work that needs to be done in this district, in this state, and also in this nation. But no private prisons. What is done in the name of the people matters. And in our name, we should not give tax dollars to people to make profit off of other people's miseries. No more private prisons and no more private detention centers.
Dr. Corey?
Yes, I would be concerned about
thing as well. I sat on the Census Commission, so I have been very involved with this, and so I'm focused on that, and it's one of my priorities.
Mr. Knight, your thoughts?
Yes, I mean, I agree with just about everything that they've all said, but the one thing that I do want to address is how we are legalizing people and corporations being able to sell marijuana in the states and be able to get all these licenses to be able to sell it medically, and there's so many people with petty charges or big charges from small amounts of marijuana use or being in their car, and have long, long drawn out sentences and have put these people behind the bar, most of the people African-Americans. So they start being 16 years old, then all of a sudden you get a charge for weed and then you start being a part of the system. So we need to start with reforming those things. If we're gonna allow one group of people to be able to sell marijuana and profit off it, we need to have way more people benefit from these things. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Turner, we talked earlier about some of the frustrations and horrible issues that emerged from the pandemic, but what initiatives were either implemented or expanded during the COVID crisis that you think should become a longer-term part of how our nation runs, how it operates?
In terms of the Biden administration's, the COVID relief package, which was $1.9 trillion, in that package was the child tax credit. And, you know, parents are going to be receiving relief. And through that, just that one portion of that policy change, cutting childhood poverty in half. Now, the thing about, very good, excellent, I definitely support it, but it is temporary. So I would like to see that made permanent, and that we as a nation expand that, because if we can cut childhood poverty in half, we might as well go all the way and cut it 100% and to make sure that that kind of thing is permanent. It also shows, as by way of example, that with that bill, that poverty is a policy choice. So we can make new choices through public policy and eradicate poverty. As the wealthiest nation on the face of the earth, there's absolutely nothing that we cannot do. If we reimagine and really have a willingness for transformation, we can get this done and eradicate poverty in the United States of America.
Thank you. Mr. Shabazz, what came out of the pandemic as a public policy that you think should be continued and or expanded?
I'm going to say I give a nod to my colleague, Kim Turner, on some of the things she stated, definitely. But I also want to add specifically is that more of the collaborative efforts to actually really treat and prevent the poverty as she addressed it, the policy direction. That's the reason what it is. So what are some of the things that we can do about that specifically? Again, we need to be invested into these communities. We can no longer go on this pathway where we allow these individuals to just eat and fight and survive. People are in survival mode in the streets. When you look outside, people are dying and being killed all over this country. And what's happening is we are going to keep allowing these situations to fester and permeate. But reality-wise, we need a leader in this position because we are in the civil rights era. As you see right now, you see all these anti-protest bills, these anti-voting bills. We're looking at an increased amount of oppressive techniques to actually impede on actual progress. And I know that some of my colleagues here, they don't want to rock the boat. But listen, the boat always will rock on the water. And I've been on a ship before. If I have to go through the seas, the rough seas of oppression to get progress, I will always fight for progress. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Corey, what did you see come out of the pandemic that you think should be continued, expanded?
I saw a lot of panic in pandemic. This question and the previous question dealing with substance abuse, I think, indicates the need to think differently. The government programs on war against drugs and the war in poverty over the past 6 years have been failures. We need better public health authorities in guiding policy. We need to restore, surprisingly, confidence of the people in the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health. And one way is to be honest with the American people. I don't think that there was so much honesty, but rather polarization, which exacerbated the terrible COVID pandemic. So those were, I think, teaching lessons. And there was disparity in addition to the physical issue, and there's psychological isolation that's associated with both substance abuse as well as the pandemic. I think this really gives us some thought as to who should be leading this country and who should be relying upon, whether it should be lawyers or whether it should be healthcare workers, you know, who can put their voice into how the policy is made and to avoid the extremes of polarization. The lockdown has been catastrophic for so many people. The obesity, suicide, drug overdoses, the 30% of small businesses that have went bankrupt. This indicates that health is really a complex issue that is dealt with politically as well.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, did you see something coming out of the pandemic that you believe should become a permanent and or expanded part of U.S. federal policies?
Yes, I did. And that was awareness. Awareness how our government has failed us for so many years and refused to do something about it. and not only refuse to do something about it, but act like it wasn't happening. I think that instead of maintaining some of these programs, I think that we should find a way to be more proactive in what we have found and what we have become more aware of. So I think looking at it in those terms, we can stay ahead of the ball or ahead of the game and make sure that we don't have to see all of this poverty and sickness and disparities in health, and also our kids lagging behind in education without any resources. So we see that now. We see how the child care centers really help and aid us and help women stay on in the workforce. So that awareness has brought us to a light that I hope will shine forever, and our government will no longer fail us in these things.
Mr. Johnson, the infrastructure bill is still being negotiated. There's still hope for some kind of compromise on it. One of the biggest infrastructure programs that the nation ever got involved in was the interstate highway system. And while that has many, many people who give it a lot of support and plaudits, it also managed to segregate cities within themselves, cut off a number of neighborhoods, especially African-American neighborhoods. What should be done to ensure any new infrastructure plan benefits minority communities?
I think the difference is that from the beginning, we have right now sitting at the desk, sitting at the one of the Oval Office, someone who has made a commitment to make sure that minority communities are not disrespected or treated differently. So I'm comfortable that we have a Congress and a Senate, as well as a president, who will make sure that we're in the room when we talk about how to implement a infrastructure bill. As well as not just roads and bridges, but of course broadband as well. I live in Glenville, which has been redlined when it comes to the digital, the divide. And so that is something that we have to be at the table. We are at the table, and we will make sure that the policies of implementation, once we get it passed, of course, we'll be able to be there and make sure that we're watching it and make sure that there's inclusion, economic inclusion on the other side as well for those who are doing the work.
Mr. Knight, what are your thoughts on ways to ensure the minority communities are at the table?
Well, it's interesting because when you talk about these bills, they always seem to talk to a certain audience, and they're missing part of the bill that they're trying to get rid of is part of the things that help with child care and health care, which helps benefit women. And we need to make sure we fight for that, because that is, you know, once again, we talk about education, we talk about these opportunities. We need to make sure that these women and they have these real opportunities. I'm the youngest of seven, and I have four sisters, and I couldn't imagine them not having proper opportunity. What I would like to talk to when it comes to minority opportunities, when people do, you know, being a minority contractor, sometimes we don't all get access to minority contracts. Sometimes there's favors given, maybe sometimes there's things that are given to certain people. And what we need to be able to do is be able to hold all of our people accountable for what they do when they're giving out minority opportunities and minority contracting to all, not just, you know, not just favors to people that they know.
Ms. Brown?
Thank you. I am excited that we have an administration that looks at things through this lens of equity and inclusion. And also the fact that we have Secretary Fudge at the table, who already put in a request to invest billions of dollars towards our internet crisis that we experienced with the lack of broadband internet services throughout the nation. I also believe that we should be using these resources to address our lead pipes. These are things that are being discussed. These are necessary things, and these are things that will definitely continue to have a positive effect and reverse some of the decades of deterioration and discrimination in communities of color and low-income communities that have had inferior products and materials installed into our communities. And so we need someone who will be able to be a partner, not a puppet, but a partner, to be able to work with the administration to negotiate, to ensure that we are getting the resources that we need in the 11th Congressional District. And the fact of the matter is, I'm best positioned to do that.
Ms. Turner, what are your thoughts?
Well, it is encouraging to see what the administration is doing. definitely the federal government was complicit in creating some of the systemic challenges that we are facing right now. None of these challenges are new. So it is absolutely important that communities of color, particularly African American community, not only be at the table, but the resources as they are being permeated throughout our community, that those resources are laser focused into making sure that communities of color actually get those, that they actually get the jobs. I mean, a lot of times when that money is flowing through, the community does not necessarily get a chance to benefit. Once upon a time, and I'm sure that Senator Johnson remembers this, Senator Smith, and probably Representative Barnes too, we had the Fannie M. Lewis law in the city of Cleveland. And that law, under the leadership of Councilwoman Fannie M. Lewis, was designed to ensure that when tax dollars come through, the people's money comes through, that the residents of the city of Cleveland actually get a chance to benefit through having jobs. I would like to see that kind of law, you know, that kind of policy position be permeated through not only the 11th Congressional District, but throughout the country to ensure that taxpayers' dollars are laser focused on the communities that need them most, not just in the infrastructure, but also in them having the jobs.
Thank you. Dr. Corey, I want to touch on alternative energy. I'm in Lake Erie. I'm sorry, I'm apparently having trouble seeing your hand. Maybe you need to put it way over your head.
Okay, here we are.
Go ahead, Mr. Barnes.
Okay, thank you very much. I think as it pertains to the minority community, we need leadership. I remember when Opportunity Corridor was coming into Cleveland, and my colleague and I sat down and we talked about that, which resulted in minority set aside of over $60 million. At each step, in each of the areas of government that we have got to set a goal and require the management to get it done. And that is what is extremely important. And that would be our focus based on having competent staff that would be monitoring that on an ongoing basis.
Thank you. Dr. Corey, I wanted to talk to you or have you start the discussion on alternative energy from a wind farm in Lake Erie to an electric vehicle battery plant in Lordstown. There's on one level, there's increasing emphasis of it as part of Ohio's economy. Yet the state has okayed supporting traditional energy such as coal over green energy. What can Congress do that will both benefit Ohio and the nation to support a transition between energy sources?
Let me see if I can link these that question and the previous question, if I may.
Absolutely. And that,
the war on poverty was started 60 years ago, and when 20% of the American population was living below poverty. 60 years later, in our district, it's 23%. That's a failure. That's a disgrace. Government has not been able to solve that problem. What we need is to think differently, whether it's about poverty, which is a major issue, and energy independence, which is a major issue, because we need to have Cleveland, Akron thrive. And there, I believe that there has to be a partnership between the public monies and private companies, that there has to be an efficiency and stimulus, whether it's to eradicate poverty or to develop renewable sources of energy. In that particular case, when I go to Congress, I feel that my expertise lies in science and technology, and I can evaluate critically what is working and what is not working with the optimism of what new technologies can be. But I think the answer is that government isn't the answer to everything. It's got to be a public-private partnership.
Thank you. Senator Smith, your response to this, what can be done at the federal level to encourage allow communities to transition from one type of energy to another?
I think what we need to do is set realistic goals. You know, when we look at 280 million cars on the road now, versus 5% of those being electric, it's going to be very difficult to meet a goal of 2030 rather than 2050. I think that we have to make sure that the people who we're going to put in these roles as a workforce, we're going to have to make sure that they're trained, properly trained. We're going to have to make sure that they have the skills. We're going to have to make sure that they're mathematically inclined and also have the scientific knowledge to do this. So if we don't, we'll fail at this. That's why we need more time, and that's why we need to make sure we set the right kind of goals to get there. I understand that we need it very badly. I understand what's happening to our earth and to our people. But if we don't set the realistic goals, then we are setting ourselves up for failure.
Mr. Knight, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a big defendant of our water. It is without Lake Erie, this area is going to be absolutely in such a dire straits. That is our biggest resource. If we don't fight to protect it, if we don't find other ways for renewable energy in our area, that is going to go down the drain and we'll be Flint, Michigan, and we'll be sitting here worried about lead pipes and all water. Where do you think who's going to be affected most? Probably these minority communities. So what we have to be working on is defending the water and work in finding different renewable energy sources so we're not sitting back and be like, wow, this happened to us just like all these other places. Let's be proactive in protecting our environment.
Mr. Barnes?
I think that we have to have a practical plan. I think that person out there who has a car and they're going to work, I don't know if they're going to be able to afford some of the new technologies out there. Not that they may not want it. So this in and of itself is going to create a different situation where I think that it's going to be a longer term before we can reach the opportunity to do that because of challenges like that for impoverished people.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Shabazz, I ask you to pick up on that. And also perhaps discuss public transit in that context as well.
Okay. Specifically, I think number one, we need to address the fact that continuous process improvement is the way that we need to be moving towards. Right now, the constraint that we're facing is individuals who've been in these offices for far too long, and they forgot what it's like to actually be some of these positions that some people are growing up in, some of which have never even been in. So we need to move towards more renewable energy resources because the current pathway that we're on a destructive pathway where we're destroying our aquatic marine life. And America is one of the nations within the global north. It's imperative that you're performing our diligence to reduce our actual impact on carbon impact on the environment. So we should definitely move towards making sure we have more of those renewable resources as opposed to utilizing fossil fuels, coal, and all those things in that nature. And specifically in terms of addressing the issue that pertains to transit, we must increase more funding, especially in areas that are critically, where there's specifically where you see large numbers of the Black and minority communities, where they've been absolutely left behind. So we have to put more of those resources in there.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, I'd ask you to pick up on public transit, which was battered both by the pandemic and by some Trump administration policies throughout the 11th District, which includes some pretty disparate communities. What do you think should be done about public transit?
I think we need to invest in public transportation. It's clear that the state of Ohio, down in Columbus, they don't support. I'm not talking about the Democrats, but the bills are running. They don't support public transportation. So the federal government has to create partnerships. Public transportation is an economic development tool. We need to expand it into the county and the five-county region. We have to be able to put it together and connect the dots, allow people to move around, to be able to go to jobs, be able to have the ability to be to expand their lives, and that's it's also an anti-poverty weapon as well. So I see public transportation as a critical factor in fighting poverty, as well as being able to help folks live their dreams and be expanded. And the federal government is going to be the ones to provide the grants to the local governments and not go through the state on that. So I'm a big supporter of public transportation, always have been.
The 11th district, I think I've heard Dr. Corey mention both Akron and Cleveland, and some people may not know the shape of that district as it is today, but it does stretch from Cleveland through the inner ring suburbs and down to Akron. Those communities have a lot in common, but they also have a lot of differences. So I'm going to ask this of all of you, if you're in Washington, how do you ensure representation of that very stretched out community while you're in DC? And I would ask you to start, Ms. Turner.
Well, definitely ensuring that the citizens in the Akron part of the district feel very much a part. I'm the only candidate who has an office in the Akron area right now. I've dealt with and been in the Akron community, even though electorally it definitely was not, you know, I didn't represent that area, but civically I've been there. I want to make sure that we have many community meetings bringing both parts of the 11th congressional district together on a regular basis. That is vitally important. And so as the next member of Congress, I will definitely ensure that the Akron area has strong staffing, just as the Cleveland area as well. And it is important that we rise or fall together in the entire district. And I certainly have heard from many people in the Akron area that somehow they feel left out. Redistricting definitely caused a lot of havoc. People in the Akron area, unfortunately, have four Congress people. So gerrymandering is a problem, and it is something that Ohio is one of the worst gerrymandered states, and I fear that it is going to get worse. But it's definitely making sure that both communities feel as though they are one.
Ms. Brown.
Thank you. I do have an Akron office, 501 Kelly Street, Kelly Avenue, and I will continue to build alliances and relationships in both Akron and Summit County. I'm proud to say of all the candidates, I have over 100 local elected officials who have endorsed my candidacy within the district, and that's including Summit as well as Cuyahoga County. And these are people that are already closely connected to the ground, in addition to over 50 prominent clergy members and African American community, and over a dozen unions throughout the district that have supported my candidacy. So keeping those lines of communication open and working collaboratively with them, as I've been doing, is something that I would continue to do if I am so fortunate to be the next representative of the 11th Congressional District. So I too believe that keeping that relationship strong will be imperative, not only now, but in the future, even after the lines will be redrawn.
Mr. Barnes, how do you represent Cleveland and Akron and all points in between? You're muted.
I representing the 11th Congressional District of Ohio and Northeast Ohio. It's hard for me to understand how some people in our district have felt as though they have not become a part of the discussion. And we must open it up to everyone. And not only geographically, but we must also look at the 107 different ethnic groups that live and work in Northeast Ohio to include them in the process so that we can build a better tomorrow around the idea of having discussions that are important towards building not only here locally, but internationally. So that Cleveland once again can restore its position as the best location in the nation. So that when I sit down with President Biden, we will look at the 11th Congressional District as an example for America and looking at how we can restore the opportunity so that people will have a reason to believe they have a stake in the future.
Dr. Corey.
Yes, I'm old enough to remember Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House, who said all politics is local. And that's true. And as Mr. Barnes has said, I think there's something like 107 different ethnic groups in the area. Our strength is in the diversity. Our challenge is to make it inclusive and equal. Certainly, step one would be to have a diverse offices in throughout the community, employing people from the specific neighborhoods, and listening, for me, to listen to the individuals of the different neighborhoods to find common ground and to find areas that we need to work on. So what's really important is to be local and I plan to learn the entire district until it's redistricted. But I assume that with the courts, that this will remain pretty much a Cleveland area. And my hope is that Akron is able to get a little bit more unity so that their voices can be best heard. But until then, I will serve as a representative to everybody in the community and will employ everyone in my offices.
Thank you. Mr. Shabazz.
Is that 60 seconds or the 30 seconds?
I'm sorry. I thought I saw your hand up.
I'm saying, is that for the 60 seconds or the 30 seconds?
60.
Okay. Number one, I wanted to address something specific for all the viewers and listeners here about how shady the politics, the political system really is. Out of all of these candidates, how many candidates have another person who jumped in a race with the same last name? I want everybody to think about that. Just think about that specifically. That lets you know what's actually truly happening here in this whole political process. It's because they're trying to really impede on progress for you, for all of you who is listening. And they're trying to impede on the progress of the youth actually stepping up and being in the driver's seat of this whole political process. Now, to answer your question specifically addressing how we're going to make sure being more constituent-based Congress member, I'm going to make sure that we have our office of staff. We're going to make sure that we are actually reaching into these communities. Make sure we're actually talking about voter outreach, education. We need to have a more informed citizenry. Because what has happened is people don't know how to call foul, so you can't call. If you don't know what's fair, you don't know how to call what's foul. This is the problem that's really impeding on our process. We are facing governmental leaders who have forgot that they serve at the will of the people. That is how it works. You serve at the will of the people. You don't tell the people what to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Smith?
Well, it's just very difficult for me to consider Akron as a different district. I look at the 11th district as one district. So what I would do is form a coalition, or I should say a summit. I would call together a summit, and we would figure out an agenda for our district, the 11th congressional district. I think, I know for a fact that the people in Akron feel that they have not had any leadership. They say it over and over again. I would be present. I would be in the district. I would be accessible to people in the district. So in terms of having a district and what would I do, I would make sure I was present and represent all the people. Now I have to address Councilwoman Brown in terms of all the support you got from the elected officials. I would assume that if I was the Democratic chair, I would get that same support. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was fine.
Go ahead. 30 seconds.
I guess I would assume if I had decades of experience, I could earn that same support. But I've been working hard with those folks for the last 9 years to earn their support. They do not have any owe me anything for that support that I've earned. I'm indebted to them as the chair. I serve the people in those positions that have supported me, not the other way around, but thank you for the compliment.
Mr. Knight, how would you ensure representation of the entire district, Cleveland and Akron and all parts in between?
Well, I think I'm the only one that's actually hit all the areas due to me coaching and being a part of the working community. I've even worked in all of these areas. I know a coach, teacher, family members from people that I've coached, worked with. And this is what they constantly tell me. They feel that the Democratic Party is leaving them behind. We are going to miss out on a great opportunity to bring these people back into the fold. And if we keep misstepping, we are going to lose Ohio forever. It doesn't want to be alarmist about these things, but it is the truth. And what we need to constantly, we need to listen to everyone from Bath to Pepper Pike, okay? From Euclid to 116. This isn't trying to be dramatic, maybe a little bit is. But we have to reach out to all of them and stay in these communities and make them feel that they are part of this party and keep them a part of this party.
Mr. Johnson?
I absolutely would. I really believe in constituent services. I would absolutely have a congressional office in the district. Marsha Fudge and past Congresspeople Lewis Stokes, as well as Stephanie Hubbs Jones, at least in the Cleveland area, had offices. I did it when I was a councilman. Constituent services are so critical and so important. I also would have a advisory committee made up of residents as well as of stakeholders. And there are five municipalities in Summit County, and they all will be part of that. So I just want to make sure that's clear. There's 32 municipalities in a whole district, five of which in Summit County. And I would make sure that Akron and the other four are part of every major decision I make, and for them to help advise me.
We haven't run out of questions, but we have run out of time for the questions portion of our session. And so now we're going to move to the closing statements. Again, those were drawn at random, and the candidates will each have 45 seconds to deliver those final statements. I'll run through the order quickly. Chantel Brown, Tariq Shabazz, John Barnes, Seth Corey, Will Knight, Nina Turner, Jeff Johnson, and Shirley Smith. So Ms. Brown, would you begin?
Yes, thank you very much for doing this. I just want to remind the people that this is a rich legacy that we're looking to fulfill. We need someone with the courage of a Lewis Stokes, who demanded that we have reflective representation in our government, and I have done that when I declared racism as a public health crisis. We need someone with a connection to the community of a Stephanie Tubbs Jones, who could get into any room, from the penthouse to the projects, from the streets to the suites, to make sure she had a seat at the table so that we were not on the menu, and I've been doing that. We need someone with the competence, character, and compassion of a Marsha Fudge, who has elevated to the Secretary of HUD, and I have that. So I'm asking you to vote for someone who has the resume, the record, and the relationships to deliver the results. This is a fight for the future. I'm Chantel Brown, and I'm asking for your support. Thank you.
Mr. Shabazz.
I'm Tariq Shabazz. I look forward to having your vote on August 3rd for this House of Representatives for the 11th Congressional District of Ohio. This seat is imperative that it is filled by an individual who's actually educated in this political process, because what are we doing is we're seeing people being lifted up, being pushed forward, when they have no idea how any of these things work on federal level. Specifically, one of the things I will address as your next congressman, I will fight to make sure we bolster our cybersecurity infrastructure, something that has not been talked about enough. We're seeing these huge pipeline attacks. We're seeing all of these things that are impeding on progress and national security of this country. Allow me to fight for reparations, to make sure that we address the actual egregious deeds committed through slavery, and also have a restorative process to it, Medicare for all, an environmentally justice-based system, and as well, we need to address the environment. I'm going to push for more hearings on actual military to make sure that highlights the things that we've been doing and impacting our environment. Thank you so much. Vote for Tariq Shabazz. Have a good one.
Thank you. John Barnes?
VoteBarnes.com. I want to thank the City Club for having this important debate today. I think that it's extremely important for our community. In Congress, I will put people first. I always have, and I always will. Barnes is about the business of saving lives. And many of our people are challenged right now, and we need a different level of leadership that is going to build a better tomorrow and give people a reason to believe they have a stake in the future and an opportunity for their children in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Seth Corey.
Thank you. In 2 weeks, we will be celebrating our 4th of July, when we celebrate our freedoms as a great new country. The Declaration of Independence beckoned us with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But that document was written when blacks were enslaved and women had no political rights. Our country has made progress, but we need to do so much more. Justice Ginsburg said, real change, enduring change, happens one step at a time. That step can begin with this very special election for our district. I'm an impatient person for progress, but I'm also one who doesn't think in sound bites. Simple slogans cannot solve our complex problems. I want to earn your confidence and trust. I am Seth Corey, and I humbly ask for your support and vote. Corey for Ohio. Thank you.
Will Knight.
Thank you. Once again, we have a leadership void in our area, in our city, in our county, in our state, and especially in our party. And what we need to start addressing is those issues. I want to be a leader for this area. I want to be a leader for the city and the state and the party to help rebuild some of the issues that we have here. And I'm hoping I can make some young people proud who are starting to feel the pinch and feel the fact that they're being left behind. And I want to also assure people that I am not that person that's going to leave anyone behind. I'm going to help moving forward. I'm going to reach back to move forward, like our creed with the Minority Achievement Committee. Reach back to move forward.
Thank you. Nina Turner?
When I think about running for this office, many things enter my mind, but definitely the memory of my mother, who died at a young age of 42 years old with her dreams deferred. Many of you are familiar with the poet Langston Hughes. When he asked a very important question, what happens to a dream deferred? I am running to ensure that the residents of the 11th Congressional District from Greater Cleveland to Greater Akron, that very few people have to ask that question about what happens to a dream deferred. I have the vision to help to provide provision for the poor, the working poor, and the barely middle class from all walks of life. I do believe, similarly, in the words of Booker T. Washington, that there are two ways of exerting one's strength. One is by pushing down, and the other is by pulling up. You need to have somebody that will lead this community who does have a vision, that understands being a partner does not mean being a puppet, that working with does not mean acquiescing to. So vote for Nina Turner for Congress, ninaturner.com. You will always know whose side I am on. My first, second, third, fourth, and fifth concern are the residents of the 11th Congressional Districts.
Jeff Johnson.
I'm ready to start from day one to go to Capitol Hill. Please don't send someone there who has to spend years in order for them to become effective. I've been a legislator for 23 years, but not just my resume, and resume is relevant, and achievement is relevant. It's also what I've done in the street. I fought for $15 an hour way before others was pushing it in Cleveland. I fought to remove poison lead from housing, rental housing in Cleveland. We were able to finally get that. I have a list of achievement, but I also have a list of qualifications that is more than any other candidate. Don't go by just promises, but go by what's achievement. Resume is relevant. I'm looking forward to the opportunity of taking my years of public service to Washington and starting from day one and fighting for poverty and other issues. Thank you. I ask for your vote.
Shirley Smith.
I will repeat something that I heard a politician say long ago. Councilwoman Brown, you are no Stephanie Tubbs Jones. But I want to say to the audience that I worked hard. I came from the bottom, the very, very low bottom, and climbed my way to the top. I worked hard to get here. I sacrificed myself, my family. I sacrificed the people around me to get where I am. Nobody gave me any position. I earned it. I earned it. I worked hard to gain whatever I have today. So I'm saying to you, you have trusted me once. I want you to trust me again, because I work hard and I don't wait for people to give me anything or put me in a position. I will do as I always have. I will work for you and you can trust me. Thank you.
I know these are closing statements, but let's be clear. I have earned everything that I've gotten. Been elected and elected to every office that I ever held. I don't think any...
Ms. Brown?
In this race.
Our debate's over.
Thank you.
Ms. Brown, thank you. Our debate is over. Schulze?
Thanks. Thanks to all of you. And thanks for the passion that has been part of tonight and for the answers.
And Schulze, thank you for your skillful moderation. We appreciate it. I also want to thank my colleagues, our member volunteers who are helping to keep time in the other room. And I want to thank all of you for showing up for candidate. I want to thank you candidates for your participation tonight, for your participation in this race, and for stepping up to serve the residents of Ohio's 11th Congressional District. And I want to thank our viewers as well. I want to remind you too that early voting begins on the 7th of July, and the election, the last day to vote is on Election Day. That's on the 3rd of August. We've been joined by all eight candidates. It's been a very fair, robust debate, provided all candidates an opportunity to connect with you, our voters. Thanks again to Schulze and to our City Club Debate Committee for coordinating this important event. All of the City Club's virtual forums are presented for free every week. Thanks to generous support from Bank of America, the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District, and PNC. Our debate tonight is just one example of the programming we produce year-round. This is thanks to City Club members, sponsors, and donors who support conversations of consequence that help democracy thrive. You can join them by making a contribution online, becoming a member, or simply texting the word donate to 216-616-CLUB. That's 216-616-258.
So that was the congressional debate. Apologizes again. This is Larry H. Gardner, G Podcast, voiceitradio.com from 5 to 6. Headlines and Headaches on the show is called Headlines and Headaches, and the Headline Eye on the DJs from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. On www.wnrv1081.com, Nerve DJs Network. The reason I did this, and I still do apologize because I was in transit as far as going back and forth. The reason I did recorded that partially, because it was like an hour or something on log, and Anchor doesn't give me that much time, was because it's important, because this race is important. As you heard from other candidates, some have are known, some are known. And the thing about it is gearing all their perspectives, from reparations to police brutality to racial injustice to healthcare disparities. These are all important in communities, African-American communities, and other communities around across the country. Ohio is going to be an impact for Ohio to be a battleground state again, instead of just being red, Republican, or blue Democrat. It would be a battleground state where it's an even keel, that we must, and I repeat, we must elect the right candidate. These are the eight people that are running that are left. There is a couple of people that have dropped out. So it is important for you to listen and learn. If you can get past the noise and other distractions, you can hear some great points from the candidates themselves. I'm not going to name them out all at once, but thank the City Club for giving us a chance to listen and see what's going on. So early voting starts July 7th. For this election, the special congressional election is August 3rd. Those who, that is the Democrat part. Whoever wins the Democrat part will go in November to face the Republican counterpart, their Republican counterpart for the same seat that was occupied by Congresswoman Marsha Fudge, who was pushed to being the HUD, the Housing and Urban Development President, and Senator in President Joe Biden's cabinet. So when she left that void, this is a special election. No one can be appointed to this position. You must vote, and voting is very, very important. Thank you very much for listening. This is Larry H. Garner again, and I do apologize about the noise once again in advance, and you have a great night. And if nobody tells you that they love you today, I do.